This is Marilyn Polson. I'm with Dixie Holland. It's May 9th, 2023, and we're here to talk some about the ranch. Okay, Dixie. Okay. First memory of the ranch.
First memories of the ranch. I used to come up here when 10, 11, 12, and sit on the top rail of the fence post, watch some Mark and Brand cows, calves. And there's a picture of them. I have a picture of them in my office. I'm sitting up there with, I think, Tom Christian. Byron Sauls, that's Fish and Sauls' son.
Okay.
All the Shoops were here. Shoops' kids were there. That'd be Byron Shoops' children, Columbus Shoops' grandchildren. The Hicks, the Lees, all the people who used to come up with my dad and mother, and they had a big marketing and branding. And WC was there, Bill Blair, Dean Priest, Jake Parrish, Earl Stokes. And it was a Mark and Brand family type thing. And they and everybody brought covered dishes. They didn't have tables back then. They took sawhorse, and a 4x8 sheet of plywood and turn and then put a sheet over it. That was the table. Everybody bring covered dishes.
What was your favorite food?
Under oak trees. I have a picture of that. Just chicken and dumplings, corn peas, cornbread, biscuits, country fried steak, ham, all homemade, everything. Then we used to go churn ice cream. The Priest kids, Norma Faye, she's the oldest. She was Sandra's age. And then there was Sandra Gale, Ruthie, and Jackie. And Margaret, that was WC's wife. And all their families would go help Mark and Brand. It's an annual thing, springtime. And we used to do that every year. And then I got a little older. I come up here in the summertime and stay in town. And before that, I remember coming up here with my dad, Bob Lassing, John Lassing, and Mr. Lee, Bob Lee, John Lee. He had two boys, Robert and Johnny. Dr. Cords, and we used to go quail hunting, horseback, and I remember Bob Lassing took me out to teach me how to shoot quail, and so I was just learning how to shoot. This took the quail dogs out, and the dogs flushed the covey of quail. And because I was younger back then, a little quicker, I shot this quail. He was about 8 inches at the end of the shotgun barrel, and there was nothing left but feathers. And Bob Lassing said, "You need to let the bird fly out a little bit further," and that was a mistake, because then I didn't hit one after that. A lot of hunting trips, lots of weekends coming up with the station wagon to the house in Crystal River.
Was that with all of the kids when you would come up in the station wagon?
When you come sisters? Up in the station wagon, it was usually my mother and father and myself, maybe one of my sisters. and I was a little older then, but when we were real young, Trisha used to help Mark. My sister Trisha used to help Mark and Brand. Sandra used to help Mark and Brand. Rob and I kind of, my sister Rob and I, we kind of set up on the fence post. And we did that for several years. That was like an annual thing. And then during the summertime, we'd come up, and then we'd come up in the wintertime, and we're getting a little older then. And we go hunting and fishing, and it was a paradise. I think my dad told me he had 150 miles of roads.
Wow.
Yeah. So I remember one time, he said, I want you to take this Jeep and learn how to ride around in this ranch. There's no barge canal. There's no Ford Power. We own from the Crystal River to the Withlacoochee River, 25 square miles, 150 miles of dirt roads. No landmarks, and US 19 was two lanes, and had the Green Tavern, the restaurant, the Wander Inn, and all my dad's buddies came up, Byron, Shoup, the last thing, Elliot Holland, Langston Holland, Rutlands, come up quail hunting. And my dad said on a Sunday afternoon, take this old Jeep, old Army Jeep, and learn right around out here and learn where you're going, but be back at the barn before dark. So I was doing pretty good, and I think you and me went to the creek.
We did, right.
And that's right. Where I got real scared because I had to cross this creek in this Jeep. So I backed up way down the road and got going too fast and flooded out the Jeep. I was 7 miles from the barn, and WC found me at the Bridges Field, which is just a field that has the house on it now. And but I erased that story, so there's no use telling it again. So my dad was glad to see me. Yeah, I'm glad to see him.
Yeah, I bet.
But we did learn how to hunt up here, learn how to. And we came up here in the summertime. My dad asked if me and a couple of my buddies wanted to come up here. We were in high school, just barely old enough to drive. You boys want to come up here and work on the ranch? Man, we couldn't wait to get down to Sears Roebuck and buy the blue jeans, the cowboy boots, and the cowboy shirts with the little pearl buttons on. And the diamond flappers on the shirt and the belt. And we bought a little handkerchief go around our neck and a hat. And we had John Wayne on our mind. So here we go, all decked out. We come up to the ranch and we moved into my dad's house there in Crystal River. And we came up to the ranch about 7 o'clock and WC said, you boys go down to the where the horses are down there and saddle up them horses. I said, see, Bob Bart, a real good friend. I said, see, Bob, I told you we're gonna be riding horses. So we saddle up all these horses, about 7 or 8 of them. And Dean, that's WC's brother, he came up there. He said, WC wants to see you all down there at the barn. I said, come on, Bob, go down there. And Robert Lee was with us too. So we went back down to the barn. And we all, you gotta remember now, we're all decked out in our outfits. So WC says, there's a dump truck coming down the road here and y'all get in it. You're going to the root field. I said, what? Root field. So this dump truck pulled up with JB, he's driving, he works on the ranch, and six or eight black folks, from Dunella, men and women. I said, "Never seen." Says, "Just get on the truck." So they know you're not getting in the front seat. So I take it. So we go to the root field. It's a 100-acre field that's been disc sugar sand. There's not very many trees in it. It's 8 o'clock in the morning, and our John Wayne egos and our little outfits went down the tubes immediately. And we're picking up the rocks and the roots, and I'll never forget this black lady. She's about as big as round as a pencil. Her name was Dee. She says, "You boys got to slow down. The bear's going to catch you." I said, "Dee, there ain't no bears out here." She goes, "There's a bear coming. Y'all keep that up. You're going to see the bear." I said, "What bear are you talking about?" I didn't know what she talking about. Neither did Bob, neither did Robert. We had no idea what talking about when to get bear caught. Well, bear caught is when you get too hot and you fall out. You faint. That's called bear caught. So sure enough, about 11, the bear got us. Because we're out of shape, sitting slickers. So Dee says, "Now the only way you're going to survive out here is to get on the lee side of the truck. So the man driving can't see you in the mirror. And pick yourself up a rock and tap on the side of the truck, because he is the rhythm. He knows the rhythm of the people throwing the rocks in the truck. And you keep the rhythm going, he can't see it. He thinks you just take one rock till you get yourself back in shape." That's how we learned.
Oh my God. So you were what, 16?
16. 16. 15 yeah. and a half. 16.
Yeah.
Better.
15, 16.
So next morning, back to the same thing again. Go down and saddle the horses. It went for us. And then we go back to the barn, and here comes the dump truck. Man. So about week two, we decided we would take over the driving of the truck and jerk JB's butt out of there, let him go pick up rocks. So we managed to do that. And I never forget him. When he get mad at you, he'd start, his voice would go up about 4 octaves or whatever. And he'd talk like this, "Oh, you boys leave me alone." Giggle. So we did that. And so we started driving the truck. And so about the third week, Dean Priest comes up to us in the morning and says, "You boys want to go hog hunting?" So we got back on our cowboy outfit now. So we got done with the root field at 5. We're totally exhausted. And we managed to get ourselves together. And we go down to the horse barn. And Dean has got some horses saddled for us. And we're ready to go hog hunting. So we get on the horses and we go hog hunting from 5:30 till dark. We catch all these hogs and tie them up. And then we load them up in a truck. And we take them up to the barn and we put them in his pen, the live hogs. Next afternoon, we go do the same thing. This went on for about a week. I said to WC one day, I said, "WC, why is your brother saddling up them horses for us? He gave us a couple of cigarettes too, maybe a beer in the saddlebag. Why is your brother saddling up these horses for us?" He said, "You ain't got it figured out yet?" I said, "No, WC, I don't." "Well, you and Bob and Robert get up a little earlier tomorrow and go to the Holiday Inn and get yourself some breakfast. Open up the menu. Maybe you'll get it figured out then." So we go to the Holiday Inn and we open up the menu, and down there about the fourth row is Dean's homemade country sausage. I went, "Whoa." So my old brain, young brain, started clicking a little bit. So I go blowing up to WC that morning. I said, "WC, I got it all figured out. We're taking my dad's horses, his saddle. Dean's probably on the clock. We're going out and catch my dad's hogs. We're fattening up the hogs with my dad's corn. Dean's killing the hogs, selling sauces at the Holiday Inn and putting the money in his pocket. WC looked at me with them nice eyes he had and he said, "That's correct. And if you tell your daddy, there won't be no more saddling up on the horses after work. You understand? That's just the way it is." And that's the way it was. That's exactly how it was on a lot of things up there. That's the country folks' way. This was the way it was. So about week two or three, my dad says, "Come on, boys, let's go to the Holiday Inn for some breakfast." And naive that I still was, I'm like, "Oh man, he's gonna see that." And old Bob said, "Your dad knows." I said, "I know he knows." And that's Dean and his family is still making sausage. 1, 2, 3, 4 generations. Wow. I give 6 to 8,000 pounds of sausage away a year. Just a calling card. So we used to go catch the hogs and, you know, me and Bob would go up there on Sundays, you know, that was our day off, and we go borrow the tractors out of the barn and we go get them stuck. And then we'd go back up to the barn, get another tractor to go get that one out. And then we'd go back up to the barn and get another tractor, get the other one out. And then the last time we went to the barn, every time we went to the barn, it's a 4-mile walk. So we started this little thing at 7. And about the fourth time we came up there, WC said, "Don't get any more of my tractors. I'll take care of them. You boys are going back to St. Pete. You've done enough damage." So about a week later, my dad called me in his office and he said, "I have this invoice for you." I said, "For what?" He said, "Florida Power brought a D6 bulldozer down there to pull them tractors out." I said, "Wow, really?" He said, "Yeah, I paid them and you pay me." I said, "Dad, you telling me they had to go get a bulldozer, go get it?" "Yes, and here's the invoice right here." So I paid my dad, I think $300 or $400 cash. About a year later, I kept my ear to the ground all the time. About a year later, I found out that WC went down there the next morning and drove them tractors out of that hole. And my dad and WC clunkered up this little thing to make me pay attention to equipment so I wouldn't get stuck and tear it up. There was no bulldozer down there. It was just a way to learn. So I learned. I didn't ask for the money back, but it's a learning curve. And that's how you learn back then. You know, we built a lot of barbed wire fence. But the highlight of the week, when we stayed at the house in Crystal River, Bob and I, was Wednesday night, either Wednesday or Thursday, can't remember. My dad would come up and we'd go to Green Tavern and have dinner with my dad and sometimes my mom. And we'd have Green Tavern, we'd go turtle steaks, green turtle steaks from down there in the river.
Yeah.
Highly protected now.
Yeah.
Homemade biscuits and those big machines. You don't even see them anymore. Those big machines are on the wall, the milk machine. We had a little big handle, you had to lift it up and it crimped the tube and you put your glass on there, all the milk you wanted. And we go in there and go to the Green Tavern. But between those days, we go to Coburn Supermarket and buy the Swanson TV dinners and stack them up like cordwood. You know, the peas, the carrots, the corn, and fried chicken. You know, Swanson's frozen TV dinners. That's what we ate.
Oh, I was going to ask if you all just fended for yourself when you were.
So we got a little. We got a little older, and my dad had this china. What have you called those china cabinets? Whatever. Mm-hmm. Where you set things on top of. Mm-hmm. Buffet, I guess we call it. And he had this silver plate, round plate with liquor bottles on there. And we're getting a little old enough for curiosity. So my dad would be down in St. Pete and we'd take a little sip out of the liquor bottles. We tried a little bourbon, we tried a little scotch, and gin, and vodka, whatever. And then we got worried about it because, you know, he'd come up every Wednesday, and so we got all worried about it. So we decided to go put a little water in him. And at the same time, he decided, and because he knew, he put a little pin mark on where the line, where the liquor was in the bottle. So he came up one Wednesday night, went over there to his liquor supply, and he looked at his bottle, and we couldn't see the pin mark, but he knew where it was. And he said, "You boys been drinking my liquor?" Of course, we didn't tell him yes. We had to come up with some bull crap white lie or lie, whatever you want to call it. "No, sir." He said, "Well, I know you've been drinking out of my liquor bottles, and we'll just leave it as that. And that's fine, but don't ever water them down again." So that kind of took the challenge off drinking out of my dad's liquor bottles.
Yeah.
So then we're old enough to get somebody to go buy it. And so we used to go kill hogs and take them into O.H. Hopkins, who's a black guy. Did a lot of logging for my dad. I think we've talked about that before. And we picked up rocks and roots for a long time. And then we got promoted one summer to the fence crew. Putting up fence, digging post holes, stretching barbed wire. You know, and when you work around these people, you think you're pretty tough, and you know, they work circles around you. Digging post holes, and we used to combine seed, the hay seed, and we'd have to go come with a big combine, and you put it in sacks, and you take it to the old church house, and then you had to spread it out on the floor, and you had to turn it to dry it, and then you got it. And that's a big old wide shovel. Had to go in there and turn it. And, you know, we're all having, and it's five or six, it's probably a foot and a half thick of seed on the floor. So we used to roll around the seed and get it all over us. And, you know, we didn't know any better. We're kicking half of it out the window and you can't sell it, you know, as kids. So we got it all dried, and then they had a bagger and we bagged it up. So now we're taking it from this barn to the truck. And they have to go put a bag on your shoulder and 100 pounds and take it to the truck. So me and Bob, you know, we're Mr. Bad Butts. So we backed up there and somebody loads it on your shoulder and you take it over to the truck. And I never forget old Buck Bertine. That's Margaret's brother. He backed up to where they loaded the seed, and they put one on each shoulder. There we go. Our ego back down on the floor again. So, you know, it just good memories. Just I could just go on and on and on. So we built fence, and we went up to the barn one time. I said, "WC, we can't get the post hole down. We can't get the hole. They're too rocky." And we tried all the picking the shovels and all that. So WC comes out there and he opens up this bomb. I'll never forget this. He had a stick of dynamite, about 12, 18 inches long. And he reached down and he got his pocket knife. I didn't know anything about dynamite. And he cut a little piece off the dynamite, like a big round cigar. Got about 4 inches off the stick of dynamite. And he put a fuse in down in there and a cap. The cap is what makes the dynamite go off. So he put the cap and the fuse about that long. And he set it down there and he put a rock over on top of it and he lit it. And we all hauled butt. And then later on, after it blew up, we spent an hour filling the hole up for one post hole. That's how we learned. So I need to go take a break, take a glass of water, and see how my crew's on for 2 minutes. Now, I'm getting too long-winded?
No.
I could tell stories all day, so I don't know how far you want to go in the storytelling, but he's come up in summertime. And then.
Did you ever mind leaving St. Pete when you came up for the, No,
it was a treat to come up here.
Yeah.
Pretty soon we're getting a lay of the land. You know, we know the land, we know all the people, and we go to the church suppers. We went to church suppers, and the Sunday said, we didn't go to church enough, but we went to the, when they had the feed bag on, we didn't miss that. So, Markin and Brandon, and then it's summertime, picking up the rocks and the roots and the field, and Dee and Addie and all these great people, just super people. And did a lot of fence building, and then we got to then we got a little elevated, and I remember one time I begged WC to let me drive a tractor. He didn't want me driving a tractor. And I finally talked him into it. And so I had this tractor and had a sickle bar. That's the bar that extends out from the tractor and it cuts like this.
Okay.
They don't even use them anymore. Sickle bar, old school for cutting down hay, cutting grass down. Not this kind. It's a long arm. So I begged him to let me drive this tractor and go mow the weeds. And 100-acre field has now got grass in it because we picked all the roots and the rocks up. But when we used to pick up the roots and the rocks, we'd have it all done. And here comes Pete and this bulldozer my dad bought for him, a D6, which is a pretty good dozer, and this big roan disc, they call it a harrow disc. Huge. And we have that field all slicked down. You couldn't see a rock or root. Here come that bulldozer and that disc. And here they all come up from, all this thing down there asleep, all come up top. The rocks and the roots. There we are.
Start again,
all over. And you did that until there was no more rocks or roots. And they planted it. And we used to cut our own hay and plant it. That's another experience. Hot, green, moist hay, sitting on the back of a hay wagon, throw it in this machine. I don't think they make them anymore. It's a whirlwind, and you throw the grass in it, and it shoots it out. You cross your arm in that thing, it cut a rattle. Okay. Unbelievable. But that's just the way it did it. And then you had to shake it, put it in there. Santa remembers doing it. Santa and Pat both did it. And you shake the grass and I'd throw it out there. And this big and the faster that tractor went, the faster that little thing went. And the faster you got to work. And if you missed a splotch, then you look behind and there'd be a hole like this plate that you missed the grass didn't get on. You better get your rear end off that hay wagon and get back there and cover that up, because that guy's coming back down that with a disc.
Oh.
You got to get it covered in or it won't grow. So if you leave, right. It's fine. So we had a lot of fun doing that. Work, hard work, but a lot of fun. And So anyway, with Debbie said, I'm trying to talk and let me drive this tractor. So there's no fenders on this tractor. It's one of the ones with a little, it's a farm all, had the wheels in the front, real close together. And there's a John Deere out there, just very similar to it. And no fenders. And WC said, now, if you want to go across the field or something, go slow, turn the PTO off, makes the sickle bar go. And I don't want you to be careful. I didn't even want you to ride on this tractor. I said, WC, I'll be careful. Please don't go mow. And I guess that's the first time I mowed. So anyway, I'm driving along mowing, and wiping, did all these dog kennels go down. It's really cool. And you mow, and then you go out there at the end of the field, and you turn around, and you're pretty good to get the hang of it, so you don't leave any little strips where you miss. So I'm doing pretty good. So I said, well, I'm going to go ahead and get me some water, that old keg of water over there by the oak tree was, and some ice that you bought from the ice house the morning before. And you had bags of ice at an ice house with the ice pick and a block. And they cut it up and put it in the water keg and stay all day long. So I go over there and the tractor, I didn't see it, the right hand side, the right wheel fell on a bullhole and the tractor went like this. And I'm coming off this tractor seat and I grab my left hand and I'm hanging on to the steering wheel and this tractor's going, still going. And Marilyn, I swear to God, it got me about 3 foot off the ground. I'm hanging on with all I got. It's tractor time, I'm going every time I'm getting closer and closer and closer. And I'm just as tired, just heating my whole arm up over here. And I went, oh, it's kind of like a train wreck. So I remember there was a kill switch about that big around. I'll show you how this tractor, and I kicked it with my foot, and the tractor finally quit. So I finally get on the ground, and I look, and my whole side right here, my whole right arm is just ate up. The tractor tire. So I click my whatever back together and I get back on the tractor and I fold the sickle bar up and I go into CWC. And he said, we're going to see Doc Hudson. And he's the local doctor. And we'll get you fixed up. Your dad will be up here in 3 days. Make sure you wear a long sleeve shirt. Because if he sees you, I'm fired. I'll be the first fired and you'll be number two.
Man.
So my dad never found out about it. Just scared to ever see his dad. And me too. I learned a lot that day about respect of tractor.
Yeah.
So then I got driving tractor a little bit more and just said, you know, I've had some close calls with him. You got to pay attention. So we're probably 17 now, 18. So we come up here in the summertime, drive our own car, and we come out to the ranch, and it was Bob Bartlett. I can't remember who was up here with me. Anyway, I pull up to the ranch on a Friday afternoon. And but that's the day we just got out of school. And pull up there and WC says, I want you to take Alfonso home. Black guy. Never forget it. He's like a brother father. He's about as big as around as a matchbook. Match, just skinny as a rib. I didn't know him from Adam. So we load him up in the old 55 Chevrolet that I had, that my dad gave me. It was this, and this was in 64 probably, 63 or 4. And so I took Al, and WC said, take Al home, Crystal River. Make sure you know where he's at. pick them up in the morning because we're loading hay in the hay barn. 65 pounds square bale hay. Took Alfonso home. Now, this is a two-door green Chevrolet, six-cylinder, like brand new. And I had a four-track, not an eight-track, not a cassette player, not a CD, four-track. They don't even make them anymore. They didn't make eight-tracks anymore, but this is a four-track. And you put the tape in and the wheel would come up in the cartridge instead of a wheel being in the cartridge. And it had two sides, where eight-track has four sides. So, of course, I got Otis Redding and Percy Sledge, James Brown, because I like that kind of music. So, man, Alfonso was the kingpin, riding around with Tidy Whitey, daddy's boy, in the green Chevrolet going into town with his black skinny arm hanging out the window. I'll never forget it. You know, you don't forget those things. So we got taken by his house, and I said, I'll see you in the morning. Okay. So I get up real early Saturday morning, and WC says, be out here at 7. I said, okay. So I go there by Al's house about 6:30. And, you know, and I think his wife came out not too happy. He ain't here. I said, oh, okay. So I'm riding around through town. I look down the street on Citrus Avenue, which comes from Dunellen. And I see Al walking down the street. It's 7 in the morning. It's 7:15. With his Friday night outfit on. Coming in from God knows where he has been. Ocala, Dunellen, whatever. And he's coming in, and I picked him up. I said, Al, we got to go to work. Take me by the house. I got to change clothes. So I stood out in the car, and he went in the house and changed clothes. And we're in the car, and we're driving to the ranch, and on the way through town, he said, stop at the Wander Inn. I want to get some bacon and eggs. Now, he's still drunk. I said, okay, Al. Now, this is so long ago. This is the back part of the Wander Inn was for the black folks, and the front part was for the white folks.
Segregated, yeah.
He said, pull around to the back. I need to get some bacon and eggs. I said, yeah, that'd be a good idea. So I pull around in the back. He says, sit in the car. I'll get you some eggs, too. I said, okay. So about 2 minutes later, out comes Alfonso with a brown bag with a six-pack of Budweiser beer, cold or you know what. And he goes, let's go to the ranch. I said, where are the bacon and eggs? He goes, this is my bacon and eggs right here. He drank four cans of that beer before I could get him to the ranch, which kind of sobered him up a little bit. I went, whoa. So I pull up there a couple minutes later, late, WC says, take the truck, take these four guys, four white guys, and this hay wagon down to the south pasture and this conveyor belt. And you all load the hay on the conveyor belt and put it up in the second loft of the barn and stack this hay. And I went, okay. So we get everybody down there and I said, Al, where do you want to go? He said, you and me get up on the barn. I said, well, I can't do this hay lifting stuff. He said, you don't do nothing. I said, you want somebody up here? Nope, just you. Okay. So we got four guys down there loading this hay on the conveyor belt. And this guy, Alfonso, had a hay hook in each hand. And he picked those hay bales up like boxes of matches and stacked them absolutely crisscross, herringbone, perfect, and never slow down. About 9 o'clock, he said, you think you can go get me some more bacon and eggs? I said, yes, sir, I sure can. I went into the Wander Inn, went to the backside, knocked on the door, got a little brown bag, bacon and eggs. And that lasted all, that happened all day long. I bet I went to town 3-4 times to get his bacon and eggs. He could outwork anybody. And he loved me and I loved him. We used to go to wrestling matches in Tampa. Me and him and this other black guy named the Preacher in the 55 Chevrolet go down to the Tampa Armory wrestling match. And I'd sit between these two black guys. And Al would say, "What is wrong with you?" I said, "Al, look around. There ain't no black person in this whole place of us two." He said, "We're all right. You ain't all right. We're all right. You ain't." That's the way it was.
Yeah.
This guy's a great, great guy. And I love that guy. And they used to go to the juke joint with him and throw dice on the floor, shoot craps on the floor, shoot pool with them. Just, good times. And he had this sweater he wore around his waist all the time. I said, "Al, why you wear a sweater around your waist?" "You'll see." In Maryland, he had a scar right here. Big old scar right here. I said, "Al, what happened there?" "Somebody over there, boys tried to cut my heart out." I said, "What?" So I get to know Al a little bit more, and you know, he's a tough bird. He goes to all the bars and the black side. And goes to the pool hall. There's only one pool hall in town you could go if you're black. I used to go there with us, and I'm not going in there with you. You come on in here, ain't nobody gonna bother you. Maryland, I opened up that screen door. They didn't have air conditioner back there. I opened up the screen door, and that screen door slammed, and there were 25 black people in there, drunk, shooting pool, shooting dice, craps, poker, and they all looked at me. And I went, "Al," he said, "this is the boss man's white son. You can see he's white. Don't bother him. If you bother him, you're going to deal with me." He is the baddest guy in town.
Wow.
He was. He wore that sweater around him because he got in a knife fight. When he got in a knife fight, he'd take that sweater and wrap around his arm. You ain't cut through a sweater. Oh, man. Put that around his arm so he can't cut you.
Yeah.
Always had a knife in his back pocket. He didn't have switchblades back then.
Yeah.
And he told me how to take a knife and make a switchblade. You take a knife, single blade knife, and you open it up and you put a little match down in the groove. So when the knife closes, it doesn't close all the way. I'll show you in a minute. And then after you cut your thumb off about four times, you get to where you can open the knife.
Yeah.
Like that. Because when you close it, it didn't go all the way back in. They all got locking knives now. He was a bad Leroy Brown. He's a great guy. Loved him to death. I've worked with him. Geez, summers after summers after summer. They called him the Hawk. He could shoot pool. He's down there in a crap game one day on the floor, throwing dice, just like you hear Leroy Brown. And some guy called it 7, and somebody else said it was an 8. And I'll never forget this, Maryland. I was up there shooting pool, drinking beer with those guys, just like nothing. And they got an argument, and this guy pulled a .38 revolver and put it right to Al's head. "Pull the hammer back." And Al says, "You better hope you shoot me dead, because if you don't, I'm going to cut you up." Pretty soon the pistol came down, the knife went away, and they're back there shooting craps again. And WC said, "You hanging out with some tough guys?" I said, "I know." He says, "Make sure you get out, stay with you. Don't go off there without him." But he's a man. So one day I was sitting at the barn, eating lunch, listening to, geez, you caught me on a good day today. Paul Harvey on the radio. We were glued to Paul Harvey on the radio at 12 o'clock. Everybody listened to Paul Harvey. Eat bologna sandwiches and mayonnaise, salt and pepper. And if you're real lucky, you get a tomato out of W.C.'s garden when he wasn't looking and put it on your sandwich. That was a highlight. And iced tea that Buck Bertine's wife made for him, and Margaret made it for W.C., especially if you're out in the woods. Brown bag, newspaper brown bag, a quart jar of one of those seal jars, what do you call them, with a seal on top. Pressurized jar.
Oh, like a thermos?
Yeah. What do you call those jars with a seal? You put tomatoes in?
Oh, yeah, yeah, like a bell jar, canning jar.
They all had bell jars with the seal,
yeah.
So it wouldn't leak.
Yeah.
With the newspapers around the jar.
Keeping it cold?
To keep it cold. Iced tea, ice, newspapers around it, real tight, rubber band around that, and then in a bag. And at noon, it still was cold with ice in it. They didn't have coolers back then. And that was something.
Didn't need a Yeti.
Didn't have a Yeti. So anyway, one day I was sitting up there listening to Par Harvey, Buck Bertine, me, Bob Bartlett, W.C., Dean, Jake, Pete, the bulldozer operator, it's all Par Harvey. And there's a calendar up on this wall up here. It had a picture of a turkey. And Alfonso was taking this ice pick and throwing it on the table. Boom, boom, stick, regular old-fashioned ice pick, throwing it on the table. And I didn't know Al as well as I did later on. I said, Al, we do the ice pick. Well, you'll see someday. Maybe I don't have to show you, but I'll just tell you. You know, if you use the ice pick and you just stick it in them, they don't know you stuck them until later on. So think about it. You get in a fight and you poke somebody with an ice pick, they hardly know you stuck them.
Right.
And they start bleeding.
Like a poop here.
So I didn't know all this. So he's just throwing away like this. I said, now, we do the ice pick. Well, I can throw it if I need to. I said, you know that calendar over there with the turkey head? Yep. You think you can hit it? Right there in his eye. And I went, whoa. You just don't forget that.
Yeah. You know?
We had a lot of fun.
How many people were working on the ranch?
Working on the ranch?
Yeah. I mean,
there was Jake.
There's a lot
Bill
of
Blair,
property here.
Jake, Bill Blair, Buck, probably six or eight. Earl Stokes, me, Bob, that's summertime.
Yeah.
Jake. Probably seven or eight of us. Dean. You know, we had the root crew, and we had the fence crew, and they had the horse crew. We didn't get much till later on, the horse crew. That took several summers for us to get our cowboy suits.
And then they didn't fit anymore.
Swanson TV dinner. We used to go get home at the river house there in Crystal River. It's gone now. And we put on our bathing suits. This is how it was. You put on your bathing suit, you walk down to the Hunter Spring. There was a pier out there. It's a diving board, high and low. The river was gin clear. And the spring there was 50 feet, just clear. And we go down to the river with the ivory soap, take a bath. That's what you did. We had a shower at the house, but we go down and take a bath, you know.
Well,
and if you're a little dirty, you take the ivory soap, get a little sand on it, and help you get the grease off your hands. So one summer, I remember going up there and W.C. said, I want you to change the oil on the tractors. I went, okay. This is before I got to drive the truck. I said, okay. He said, now you take the bucket and you put it underneath the tractor, 5 gallon bucket. And you take this wrench and you undo this plug. And if you're real good, you'll make sure that plug doesn't drop in that bucket, because it holds about 4 gallons of oil. So if that plug goes in that bucket, you get to reach your hand and your sleeves or whatever and get that plug so you can put it back in the tractor and fill it with oil. I said, okay. So I was very careful not to drop that plug. And then I put the plug back and filled up the thing. So I said, WC, what are we going to do with this oil? He said, come on, I'll show you. So we took a 5 gallon bucket of oil, the bucket's open, carried over there behind the oil shed, and poured in the go away hole. I said, WC, what is a go away hole? He said, well, you pour the oil in and it goes away. If you did that now, you'd be in jail.
Oh my gosh, yes.
So I go up after, you know, you change oil for two or three tractors. You go up there to WC. It's the WC, the go-away hole's full. So he'd step off about 10 feet and get a post hole digger and dig another hole for another go-away hole. That's how it was. The way we did it. That was a long time ago, but that's. And when the bulldozer operator got ready to change the oil on the bulldozer, Pete, never forget Pete, he hated that bulldozer. My dad bought him a brand new bulldozer. He was operating, he hated that dozer. He told me one time, he said, Dixie, if you ever get to be the boss of this ranch, I want you to buy me a D8 bulldozer. That's twice as big as a D6. And I want you to take this D6 and bury it. He hated it because it wouldn't push what he wanted to push. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't push these big oak trees down or clearing land. He had a cigarette on one side and a toothpick in the other. And swear to God, and a chew of tobacco and his hat. And he got so mad at that bulldozer, he'd take his hat off and beat the bulldozer with his hat and yell at it and cuss at the bulldozer. Fun times. Lots of fun.
So when you got up here in charge of this ranch, did you buy a new bulldozer?
Nope. Nope. I wanted to be the bulldozer operator, so I had him fix the bulldozer operator so I could run it with one hand. And I stuck it and took Bud Allen, God bless him, he's gone too. He's another father image. It took him 3 days getting the bulldozer up. So,
man.
I stuck it. Good. So we did the hay thing, stacked the hay and cleared the land and picked up the rocks and the roots, and then we did the hog hunting, and then I went off to college and I came back and worked with my dad's printing company. And it's funny, my dad begged me to go to University of Florida to take up agriculture or timber. And I told him, I said, I don't want anything to do with that. And so I went over to Rochester and got a degree in graphic arts and was personnel manager for a while. And then WC had a stroke, and then I came up here and worked at the ranch. But I was back on the, I stayed on the bottom a long time. But it was good for me. You know, went off to school, worked at the printing company, went off to school, got a degree, went in there and started at the bottom again. Then I went to golf course, sold the printing company, went to golf course, and I worked for Bud Quant. He's still around, 94.
Yeah.
He makes apple pie.
Not the kind
he put ice cream on.
Yeah, you gave me some once.
I just went up there and met him in Old Town, like a drug deal. You know, I gave him some venison hamburger. He gave me apple pie, you know. And we met at a church in the parking lot. So where were we?
How old were you by the time you got to be in charge of the ranch?
When I came up here full time?
Yeah. But even then you said your dad told you we were coming to learn.
Let's see, 20, 22 or 23.
Oh, gosh. So you were still.
Something like that.
Really young.
Yeah, I worked there a couple of years. Worked out there at the golf course, about 23 or 4. Mm-hmm. Somewhere in there.
And were you glad to be back here?
Hmm?
Were you glad to be back here?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's, you know, it was a learning curve.
Yeah.
But, you know, you come up and there's Dean and there's Buck and there's Alfonso and they're all still here and they're getting a little older and we all are. You know, Bill Mashburn, he's here a long time. And, you know, cows and brucellosis and calves and pregnancy testing cows and doing a better job of yielding your calves, calf rate, and this, that, and the other. But you could, you know, you could, I guess, the learning curve or whatever, the curve of the fun kind of goes away. A lot of it does when you become a manager.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, so WC was a manager, and then he had a stroke, and then his brother Wayne, and then Bill was the foreman a while, and then I think after that, I don't think there's anybody left to choose from, so I became the manager, whatever, you know. And, you know, WC died. He was very young.
Mm-hmm. But his family stayed.
Hmm?
His family stayed.
Yes,
on the
Margaret, Margaret stayed at her house on the ranch, and most of her kids were grown. She mm-hmm. stayed at the house. Gosh, I think we bought a house for her after we sold the ranch. I remember they did. She couldn't stay there. That's when we bought our house. Mm-hmm. You remember that?
I remember then. Yeah.
So then they used to have these squires parties. Byron Shoup would load up 2 Greyhound buses full of St. Pete folks. And they go to the University of Florida FSU football game, usually in Gainesville. And they would have a couple of drinks on the way up and 3 or 4 at the game and a couple on the way back, and they'd stop at the ranch. And they had a big barbecue for them. Huge. Johnny Jackson cooked the barbecue. And had a bunch of locals come, and they had food and a bar set up and you know, dancing. And this is the barn, not the big house. And Jackie and Ruthie used to peep out the window at their house, that's when WC was alive, at their house and peep out the window to see all those St. Pete people partying, dancing, going crazy. And then they, as they say, would pour them back onto the bus.
Yeah.
Take them back to St. Pete. And then they used to do it, they used to take the bus back to the big house when they had a big house back there.
And have a cookout back there?
Yeah, take the buses back there. Two of them. And Johnny Jackson back there cooking the barbecue. And Johnny Jackson used to come down to St. Petersburg when I was working at a printing company. And he cooked this barbecue. And I didn't know Johnny Jackson then. So we had this big barbecue for 300 employees on a Saturday afternoon. And all their wives and kids. My dad did this every year. That was part of it. The employees were your family.
Yeah.
That's how it was.
I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. For your dad, it was.
Yes.
I mean, it wasn't
and
like that for everybody, but
so
that's
Johnny
nice.
Jackson used to cook this barbecue.
I've seen some letters to him
since
I've been looking at the files. I've seen some letters to
Johnny Jackson
about barbecues.
So he'd come down to St. Pete. And so I used to, my dad say, you go out and check on Johnny. And go by and get four roses for him. Four roses. Liquor store.
Oh. Four roses. Yeah.
So I went by and got him some four roses. I said, Johnny.
Not flowers.
How long does it take to cook this barbecue? Well, depends on how long this four roses last. They cooked that barbecue meat every 4 hours or 12 hours. It didn't matter. It doesn't matter. They can cook it whenever they want to cook it. And they had a barbecue, and then they.
How long did I have?
WC would come down, bring all the firewood down, and they'd have a big. They'd do it at some place there in St. Pete. We used to have several of those. And they used to have those barbecues up there at the ranch. And we all go, they all go to the Green Tavern. And then, you know, Crystal River was one traffic light. Mm-hmm. Red or green. Mm-hmm. Didn't have no yellow. Red or green. And Ralph Rooks, the county commissioner, and he was a barber. Cut your hair. And Gil Stoney and the Green Tavern and the Wander Inn. And the Oyster House. And everybody knew everybody. And I remember Leroy Stokes came out there to ranches in high school. He's out there working. He had a Pontiac Bonneville, red and white. He had five speakers across the back sun deck. This is an old 60-something Bonneville. Five speakers on the back. Now, people don't even know what a sun deck is anymore. One, two, three, four, five speakers and a switch for every one of them. Turn them on or off. Oh. This good stuff.
So he worked here a long time, Lee Earl. He worked here a long time, right?
Oh, yeah. He worked here a long time. Yep. Lee Earl worked here a long time. Worked full-time there. Debbie Stokes, his brother, worked there for a long time. Mm-hmm. Jake Parrish worked there. Tony Parrish, he's gone. Jimmy Parrish. And we used to go down there and saddle up them horses, go play hide and seek. How you go play hide and seek on 25,000, 20,000 acres? But we did it.
We could probably hide pretty well.
Yeah. So I talked Dean into letting me ride his horse one time. Now, his horse is called Skipper, and it's a full quarter horse, cow-cut horse. And not one to just go puck around on. So he said, yeah, you can ride my horse. So Bob Bartlett and I, we got elevated in the summer, though we now are riding the horses, putting up posted signs. And the posted signs are made out of tar paper, so they last a long time, and I still got some of them in there. It says, post to keep out Hollinswood Ranch or Arbond or whatever, and phone number, WC Priest, manager, whatever. So we had a trailer and these posted signs and horse and staple gun. Mm-hmm. And so now we got to go post the coastline 10 miles, and now the barge canal is in, so we got to go post both sides of the barge canal, and the four powers there, so we got to go post around four power. So we go out a little ways and we come back, get more posts on, put them saddlebag. So these horses got so good. And they learn, and you learn, and they learn, is you go up and you go up to a tree and a horse stops. And you grab a saddle, you grab a post sign, hold up to the tree, and you hit five staples. I'm not kidding, I'm not making this crap up. Boom, 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 and one in the middle, and you're done. And the horse hears that, and he moves on. So we go from tree to tree to tree to tree, putting up these posted signs. And so we're riding down there, and I'm riding down a road here, going to another area, and all of a sudden this horse stops. Just stops. And I look around, there's a big old oak tree. This is out in the woods, big old oak tree and a nice big pine tree. I said, this is a nice shady area. So I kind of kicked the horse. He didn't want to go. And so finally got the horse to go. I didn't think any of it. So we go down a little bit further, and about another couple of 4 or 5 miles later, the horse stops at another nice spot. So about 4 or 5 more of these, I go back up to the barn and I said, WC, I think there's something wrong with that horse. Just naive. And WC said, oh, did Skipper stop where Dean used to get off and take a nap? That horse remembered where that Dean used to go take a nap. He'd get off that horse and lay down for 20 minutes, take a little nap, get back on the horse and go on, looking for cows or whatever. That's the way it was. Oh yeah, true stuff. Huh. Yes. Unbelievable. So.
Smarter than we are.
So we used to go, me and Bob used to go ride. And I got a horse stuck in the mud one time. That was bad. Got it out. It scared me, scared Bob, scared the horse. WC always say, when you ride your horse, you go out there in the sawgrass, stay where the cows are. Cows make the little trails. You gotta stay on the trail.
Yeah.
And he said, because the cow's hoof is split and it goes in the mud, it's wide, because it goes wide, spreads, and when it comes out, it, like this. Mm-hmm. So it kind of makes this hole.
Right.
When a horse goes in the mud, a horse's hoof's like round, and then it's narrow up at the top.
Right.
So when it goes in the mud, it kind of makes a suction. So I'm not talking about 2 inches of mud, I'm talking about deep mud.
Yeah.
So we're out there putting up these posted signs where we shouldn't be going because we want to go to that island over there and there's no cow trail over there, but we're going to go over there anyway because we know how to ride the horses and we got our little cowboy outfit on. So we go over there and we get that this Sue, this horse named Sue, big old thing. Columbus Shoot gave my dad this horse. He came out of North Carolina. Asheville or Hendersonville. Next to the Bond family. And this, I think Columbus Shoot gave this horse to my dad. This horse didn't even know what woods were, much less mud. So anyway, and everybody rode Sue. Everybody learned how to ride a horse on Sue. So it was my turn to ride Sue. So anyway, I got Sue stuck in the mud. So WC told us, if you ever stick a horse in the mud, get off the horse. Mm-hmm. Take the saddle off the horse. Put the reins, tie the reins, and put the reins over the horse's neck. And do not get in front of the horse and get you a big stick, and hit the horse in the butt. Mm-hmm. Do not get in front of that horse. Because when that horse comes out, they're gonna come out and they're gonna keep going if they get on high land. So Bob and I, they ain't no truck. Out there in the sawgrass marsh where we shouldn't be. And it stuck this horse. And it's up to its chonks, chest. And then no crane, and then no drag line to go pick this horse up or anything. You couldn't even get anything out there. So I took the saddle off, put the reins over, the horse is all shaking. I said, Bob, get a stick. I got a stick. I said, get a bigger stick. So we hit the horse. I said, Bob, you gotta swing the stick like a baseball bat. I said, we either get this horse out or it's gonna die. One of them, right?
Right.
So he hit her and she came out. And she got up, boom, boom, boom. She came out, she got up on the hill. So we all took a little breather, big breather. So we got the saddle back on the horse. And the rest of the day, that horse would not go in a mud puddle on the road.
Now, was that the scariest thing that ever happened out here?
That's scary.
Yeah, that's scary.
So we went down there one time, and I couldn't get old when we first had this old homemade trailer we built it, the printing company. Nick Nichols built it for me. He used to work for my dad. And him and Mr. Todd would go up there hunting on the weekends, and they go hunting for hogs, and they go hunting for bobcats, and they hunt all the time. And drank all day long. Marilyn, they drank all day long, and I never knew it.
Oh, my gosh.
Because they hid it.
Yeah.
They didn't drink in front of me.
Yeah.
And they drank all day long. Little flask, sip, you know, go around behind the tree, like go in the bathroom, take a little sip. They drank all day. Never did. Until I got older. So Nick made this trailer, and we took it up there. Now we got us a horse trailer. And we got a dog box to put the hog dogs in, and we're gonna borrow a pickup truck to go take the horses down to South Pasture. This is not a regular horse trailer. This is a homemade horse trailer. It's got a ramp on it. It's too steep, it's too short. Instead of the ramp being real long or the horse trailer being real low to the ground so the horses just get in. So we got old Sue and one of my other horses loaded up in the trailer. We go down to the hog dogs. We go down to the South Pasture, and we go down and we catch a bunch of hogs. We're trying to be like Dean Priest, but they wouldn't buy our hogs. You know, only bought Dean. There's a little cramp, a little thing on there. So we catch all these hogs, and we can't get the horse loaded. We're not loading in the trailer. We tried everything in the world. So we walk over there to Jake's house, who was there down there in South Pasture, lived down there. Four-digit phone, 2935, 2935, 2935, 2935, 4 digits.
Yeah.
That's the phone number. WC answered the phone. What you boys need? I said, WC, we can't get the horse loaded. I'll be down there in a minute. I told y'all we couldn't get them horses loaded when y'all left. I said, yes, sir. Little short guy. So he goes down there, and you know, I don't forget this. You don't ever forget these things. He says, can't get a horse load? I said, no, can't. He goes over and grabs a cabbage palm, one of the dead ones, mm-hmm. hanging off the tree. Cuts it where it's got about that long, and the cabbage hanging out there. And he reaches down and gets his lighter, his matches, and he lights that cabbage palm on fire. Marilyn, this is God's truth. He lights that cabbage palm. He says, now don't get in front of that horse, but lead it up there to that ramp. We're going to load that horse. He shoved that fire up that horse's butt, burnt her rear end up, hair burning, stuff like, smell like when you're marking brand calves. She loaded.
Yeah.
Didn't have any more trouble getting that horse in that trailer. I did it. That's how they did it. You want the horse to do something, don't let the horse, you know. So I remember one time I was with Nick Nichols down there in Brooksville. This guy's going to give me a horse or something. Don't ever let anybody give you a horse or a dog. Yeah. Doesn't work. So this guy's going to give me this horse. So we did everything in the world, and we put the... But I didn't like the cabbage farm. I just didn't have the heart to do that. So we had to rope around a horse's rear end and pulling it up and this, that, and the other. So the horse got all hot and lathered up and nervous, and it wouldn't get in the same trailer. So we went into the house to take a break, let the horse take a break. And so we go out, we get iced tea or something, and we come out to go to the horse. And I bent down to pick up the rope, and that horse kicked me right in. The next thing I woke up in the hospital in Brooksville.
Oh my gosh.
And that horse didn't have shoes, so was lucky, didn't have steel shoes. Woke up in the hospital with a minor concussion. Scared Nick to death and everybody else, so yeah. So, I used to have this guy, I think it was there. He used to come out and shoe over horses. And Sue would not stand still. And the guy, he's a farrier, and he pick up the foot of the horse and you hold it between your legs and you got a big leather apron on and you take the old shoes out and you trim them and you put the new shoes in with the nails and you got the horse got to hold still. So Sue would never hold still. She wouldn't, you know, she wouldn't pick her foot up. So I don't know anything about this horseshoeing business. So this guy's got an axe handle. Not an axe, just the handle. But long axe handle. Got a little hole in the end of the axe handle and a little string by that long. And a U. He said, I'm going to show you how to make this horse stand still. I went, okay. I'm young, didn't know this. It's called a twitch. You look it up sometime.
Okay.
So you take the horse's lip, pull out a little bit, you put that string in there, and you start turning that axe handle.
Oh, no.
I said, the guy's name was Tommy. I said, Tommy, what in the world does that do? He said, this is exactly what he said. He said, that puts that horse's attention on that lip and not that foot I'm picking up. Because you pick up a horse's foot and that horse doesn't want to hold still, he'll throw you across his room.
I bet.
So out come the twitch. Mm. Well, about three or four of them twitches that horse starts to learn. You know, but I watch him, Marilyn, eat a butte, called a butte. It's a horse tablet.
Okay.
It's for a horse, for pain.
Not like when we say a horse tablet.
Not butte for F. Yeah. Butte. It's a horse pill for pain.
Okay.
And when I got a little older, he'd shoot horses for us forever. He'd come out there every 6 weeks or whatever, shoot all his horse. And pretty soon I got to know him a little bit better and I was a little bit older and this, that, and the other. And I watched him when he came out there. He started, he'd take a half of one of those horse tablets and eat it himself for pain, back pain.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. Tough people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tom, I can't remember his last name. So where are we? We're never going to get this done. We'll be here till midnight. Maybe we'll just do phase one tonight, whatever. So where are we?
Are we stopping here? I mean, for now.
Are we on the position between coming up here in the summertime and then coming up here full time?
To be based up here.
But then start taking a responsibility, mm-hmm. Transition. Mm-hmm. So Wayne was the foreman then, after WC left, Wayne was the foreman, it was his brother. So I come up to the ranch and I'm full time. And we're getting ready to do hay. I don't know about hay. I said, Wayne, we're going to do hay tomorrow? He goes, no, we're going to have to spray this field for army worms. I said, what are you talking about? He said, we got to spray this field this afternoon, 20-acre field, and we're going to go around the tractor to spray and spray the field with army worms. I said, Wayne, it's 4:30. Spraying old field at 4:30. He goes, Dixie, we got to spray this field. Now, he's the foreman, but I'm the daddy's boy that owns the ranch. So Wayne kind of caught my heart spot. I said, Wayne,
yeah, how'd your dad feel about that?
My dad done the same thing.
Right.
I said, Wayne, we ain't spraying this field. He said, okay. I said, we'll spray it in the morning. He said, we don't need to spray it in the morning. I said, what in the world are you talking about? He goes, let me show you these army worms. Army worm, about this big, he's got a head on both ends. And they eat an army of worms.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't spray the field. I get up the next morning, and it looks like 100,000 match sticks sticking up there. And I said, there ain't a leaf.
left. I went, oh. I said, Wayne. He said, Dixie, you said you didn't want to spray that on that field. And I'm the foreman, and I didn't want to override you because one day you're going to be my boss. I said, well, I'm learning. So 2 weeks later, the field comes back up. This leaves coming, you cut. So now we got, now I'm saying about the armyworm, so now we're going to go cut some hay. You don't ever want to cut any more hay than you can bale than 3 days later. So you cut some, you dry it, you bale it. So you cut some, they cut five, the next day you cut five, the next day you cut five, the next, so you cut, dry, bale. It's a sequence. Mm-hmm. So one day you're cutting, you're drying the next day, but the next day you're cutting, it's a sequence. So you cut, but you don't ever lay down more than you can do in a day. But you gotta let it dry for 3 days. So like the army worms, Mr. Know-it-all over here, I said, well, let's go cut some hay. Well, we don't cut 5 acres. I said, let's cut 20. What are you gonna cut five for? Let's go lay down 20 acres. Dixie, we just cut five. Because if you cut five and we don't get it up and it rains, we ain't got 15 on the ground.
Right.
Because it'll ruin it. Your protein will go away. They didn't know what protein was. I said, okay. So we cut 20 acres. Not five. I do it my way. We cut 20 acres. Sure enough, about day two, here comes rain. So, got the hay laying on the ground. Wednesday, dad comes up. I'm learning. Learn about hay, learn about how to cut hay, learn about how to cut it, how to fertilize it. So we're all moaning and groaning and about the equipment and falling apart and the hay balers ain't working and the sickle bar doesn't work and the thing that drives the hay doesn't work. So my dad's up there, so he got in his car. And about 4 or 5 hours later, here comes two tractor trailers, semi-tractor trailers with a brand new tractor, a brand new sickle bar and a mower, a brand new hay mine, which is the thing that drives the hay, and a brand new hay baler. Brand new. Ford's a new Holland. Brand new. Truck driver pulled up there and they unload all that stuff. My dad looks at Wayne and I, he goes, I don't want to hear any more about your problem with equipment. But they have. So we went from a square bale to the round bale. Mm-hmm. And the round bale is a round baler. Square bales weigh about 60 pounds. Round bales weigh about 800-900 pounds. And you pick them up with a piece of equipment.
Okay.
But you got to know how to run a round baler. You got to know how to wind the windrow so it's nice and square, a long windrow, and to dry it. And you got to know how to run the baler so that round bales, like you look out on the highway, are nice and round.
Yeah.
If you ever look at one that looks like an ice cream cone, that's one somebody that doesn't know what to do. Like me. Wayne, I'm gonna run that hay baler. Well, Dixie, you gotta weave. I know how to do it. Bah, bah, boo, bah, boo. So Wayne and them, their hay bales are nice and square, round, but they're the same diameter on this end as this end.
Right.
Mine are like ice cream cones, real narrow down here. Gotta weave. Gotta keep moving like this. So you fill up your whole thing. You don't know how to do it. They had a lot of fun doing that stuff. Run hay balers, hay, fertilizer, army worms. We had a combine machine, a combine that seed. Old Buck Bertheim was down there. I said, Buck, what are you doing? He said, I'm greasing this machine. I said, well, show me how to do it. I'll do it for you. Old Buck looks at me and says, Dixie, there's 150 grease fittings on this. I said, whoa, really? He said, I got to make sure I get all of them. I said, I got to, you can have it.
Yeah.
I know we did pregnancy tests for the cows. I know we did semen tests for the bulls. I know we
got a little bit more intensive of raising better calves, and we started raising purebred bulls, Brahma bulls and Angus bulls and Brangus bulls. We started doing a little bit more health for the cattle, a little bit better food for them, better protein, put better hay up, protein blocks, syrup tanks, syrup licks, I call them. Pay more attention to the cow-calf operation. Started learning management of timber, planting, cutting, control fires, understanding about young trees and cattle operations, don't mix. Cows lay down on your small trees.
Okay.
Eat the buds. Started learning a little bit more about how to get more out of the land. We used to sell palm trees, got the palm tree business, beehives, hunt lease. That was an eye-opener, hunt lease. That was pretty good income. You could still have, could lease the land out, make a pretty good income. You could still have cattle on the land. We designed a contract so we could still hunt on the land, even though we had a hunt lease. Got very involved with deer management, of deer, animal use permits. Working with agencies instead of against them. Learning how to work with FWC, DNR, Department of Natural Resources, Department of Environmental Protection. Started learning about zoning, comprehensive land use plans, different types of zoning restrictions, setbacks. Learned about the mining industry. That became a significant income for us, mining income.
Did that first company north of the canal?
Gulf Coast Arrogance.
Is that who, okay.
Gulf Coast Arrogance, 1972.
Okay.
Learned about working with neighbors after long battles of lawsuits, restrictions, noise, dust, air blast overpressure, working with fire marshal, mining ordinances, protect your rights, protect your land, timber rights, trespass laws, working with DOF, Department of Division of Forestry, on how to secure burning permits, learn how to burn, get a burning certificate, be a certified burner. Which back in the old days, they didn't have permits. They didn't do certified burning. They didn't recycle oil. We put it in the go-away hole. Much easier though.
Yeah, that's the truth.
We did our own best management practices before they ever had best management practice manuals. We knew not to dam up the creeks, make swales in them so the water would flow on big rainy seasons, Dixon Hammock, and the tidal water would come in and you wouldn't, don't block it, so it would come in and would go out, build your road, so you either put ample sized culverts in, or you put swales, so that you could still let the natural flow of the water come in or go out. Runoff, learn how to, you know, concern with runoff, concern with how to build roads in the woods so they don't trap water. They're on a crown. Roads are built on a crown. Good roads are crowned, so the water runs off. Mm-hmm. Instead of having little ditches on both sides or with a kind of road grader wind, it throws up a windrow and traps the water. Learn how to be a little bit more respective of when to drive around in the woods with all your friends. When it's pouring down rain, you think it's fun, and then you go back and you tear up all the roads, and then you got to fix them. So you learn, we're not having a deer drive today. It's pouring down rain. I don't want 20 trucks out here riding around because you're tearing up your road. That's what happens.
Right.
So we learned to do that, and we learned to, and my dad taught me how to go, okay, we're going to hunt in this area this weekend, and next weekend we're going to another area, and we're not going to put a lot of pressure on this deer on these areas. We're going to get in a deer management program where we actually weigh the deer when we harvest them. We do age for jaw bones. We do fetus, how many fetuses, if they have fetus. What's the sex of the fetus, how old the deer is. We work very closely with the biology department from FWC. We were the first or second landowner in the state of Florida to get an antlerless permit. And that back in them days, that was a no-no, shooting an antlerless deer, which is a doe deer.
Right.
Very highly criticized back a long time ago. Deer management is no different than cattle management. Your land can only support so many cows, and your land can only support so many deer. You got too many cows, your cows get thin, the calves don't produce good, your reproduction goes down. Same with the deer. You got too many deer, everything starts sliding down. Learn how to let young deer walk. Don't harvest them. Don't harvest the little 3 or 4 pointers that are 1 year old. Wait till they're 5 or 6 or 7 years old. When they're less reproductive, the deer have a cycle. Most of their cycles usually good 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years, just like people. Mm-hmm. When they get older, they don't have good reproduction. Good antler deer are hereditary. So we learn how to harvest the deer that aren't putting out good antlers, because that's what they're going to breed. If this guy has bad antlers, genes, that's what he's going to have.
Right.
That's his kids are going to have bad antler genes. Same as cows. If you got a good bull, you got a good cow, you got good calves. You got a bad bull, you're going to throw your bad calves. You got a bad cow, you're going to throw your bad calves. Same thing. Much more sophisticated now, especially on the cattle industry. Much more sophisticated. We put a lot of efforts in the antlers deer program. Controlling your harvest on a leasehold and controlling your harvest on invited friends. When you work your rear end off all year long for 2 years and you're trying to protect the small, I call them basket type deer, where the horns are very close together, called basket, two points on the left, 2 points on the right, or 3 points left to right. They're young deer, they have a basket. The older they get, the more the horns spread out.
Okay.
Trying to protect those through rules, through regulations, and then through fines that we did not want to impose. So one time I remember the game management, Gordon Spratt, said, "Mr. Hollins, you and your son are working your rear ends off to manage these deer and invite your friends up, and with all the work and the money you put into this thing, they pull the trigger and shoot what you don't want to shoot." Because
unfortunately, you set some rules up and you put $50 a point if they're shooting illegal deer. It's got to be over 14 inch spread. That's 14 inches between the horns. Got to be so many points. And unfortunately, some of your friends don't respect the rules or whatever, or not paying attention. And then you shoot a nubbin buck, which is a young buck that never had a chance to even grow up. Because they're not paying attention, that's probably the biggest no-no. Or they're shooting six-pointers when you want to let them grow up, because they're in their prime breed. And instead of taking your prime breeder, like the bull you just raised for 3 years and shooting, you never get a chance to throw his offspring. So we went from $50 a point to $100 a point. Unfortunately, that didn't get some of their attention. I'm sad, and unfortunately. So Gordon came up with a great idea. You pay your fine, $100 a point. So if you shoot a six-pointer, you know, so that's $600. Then you take the deer down to Beau Reed Taxidermist down in Pinellas County, the highest, most expensive taxidermist there was in them days in the state of Florida. He's the best. And you pay to get your illegal deer mounted. And then you bring the mounted deer and we'll put it on our wall, not your wall. So now your deer doesn't go above your fireplace that you can tell all your peoples on your third cocktail this night's six-point in your shop. It won't be on your fireplace. It's going to be in our fireplace. With a note that Bill Grant
so-and-so
shot or Byron Shoup or whoever it might be, shot this six-pointer, $600 fine, taxidermist, another $400, and we're proud to display it for you. And when that happened, that stopped
it.
The harvest of the deer we didn't want to shoot. But that's how far we had to go.
Yeah.
And I've been up to Joe Brannon's place. He's very into deer harvest management. And you go hunting with Joe Brannon, he has his son or his grandson or him sitting with you. Yes, you can take that one. And no, you can't take that one. And one of Joe's friends, Joe asked one of his friends, a close friend, Joe's my age.
Okay.
Asked one of his friends, says, hey, Harry, or whatever his name was, Harry, I'd like to invite you up to go hunting. And Harry said, Joe, I really want to appreciate it, but if I came up to your ranch hunting, we would not be friends anymore because I would just have to pull the trigger. I am sorry. He said, well, then don't come up, but we'll still be friends. And that's how it is. So I've known Joe a long time. And my wife, Rob, and I go up there, and his son, Matt, or his grandson, or his other son, will sit with us. And here comes Big Mo, and they go, no, that we were thinking that. So they let those deer grow up and use that good breed stock, so to speak. That just alone is a big undertaking. Lots of data. We used to count deer tracks, do spotlight counts, disc fields. Very intense study. And we still do it. We don't do track counts, but we're still in the game management program. But it's changed. You can go get a permit now to have antlered deer. You don't have any deer. You're gonna have 600 acres to get a permit. Just whatever. Big change. Just like it's, you know, less hands-on. You're not required to take all the data. We still do. Not required to do that. You're required to call in your deer harvest now. That's just been 5 or 6 years. But see if I can say this. I went to a meeting one time and they started changing these rules in the report and harvest. Everybody went up in arms.
And the guy that's ahead of all the rules for the deer said, if I'm saying this the right way, Florida is the most liberal, is that the right word, liberal?
Probably.
Liberal yeah. state in the United States on deer harvesting. Everybody else, you get so many bucks that you can shoot, so many does you can shoot,
right.
if you're just a citizen of the state of Florida. If you're a landowner, you have to go by the rules, or if you're in an antlers program, which we are still, then your land supports so many deer. That's all you can harvest. Mm-hmm. And they predetermine that. Just that harvest deer management is a big part of managed land,
mm-hmm.
big part. You try to burn for it, you try to take care of your deer and let them grow and don't put pressure on them. Gordon Spratt told me a long time ago, that's Rick Spratt's father. Rick Spratt's a good friend of mine, a biologist. His father was a biologist for the state of Florida. He got me into the hunt lease down in the South Pasture. Mm-hmm. He said, Dix, you can get $10 an acre. I said, Gordon, you're crazy. He said, no, you can't. You got great deer down there. You got a beautiful piece of land. You've got 10 game plots down there. So he introduced me to hunt leases. This was in the 80s. $10 an acre in the 80s for a hunt lease was unheard of.
Mm-hmm.
Today, hunt leases are 15 to 20. The large landowners today are looking at large hunt leases. Good income, big income. Some of them are higher than that. Some of them are that much, and if you shoot a deer, that they collect money also within their club. Big money in deer and deer management. Big money. So going back to this fine of the $1,500, I said to one of my dad's friends, I can't remember who it was, Rutland Rowe, I think, great guy, or Bill Grant or whatever, it doesn't make any difference. I said, why did you shoot that 8-point deer? He said, well, Dixie, I'll just be right up front with you. He said, and this is the sad part about being landowners, is you find out true, you find out a lot of things.
More than you want to know.
So it cost me three times that much to go to Texas. So I just soon pay you or your daddy $800, $100 a point. That's before we made him mount it and put it on our wall.
Mm-hmm.
So when we mounted it and put it on our wall, it stopped like that.
Mm-hmm.
So we had the sheriff out here one time, Charlie Dean, walking tall sheriff. My dad put him out down there on the South Pasture in a beer can trail, as we used to call it. As my dad took a ribbon, a marking ribbon, and tied a beer can around the tree for either somebody to come by this trail and get this cold beer. That just stuck, that name just stuck, beer can trail. Next thing you know, everybody is tying the beer around the beer can tree. I can take you down there today and show it to you. It's still down there. So my dad put Charlie Dean, the sheriff of Citrus County, out on this tree stand. And my dad, on a road, not a tree stand, on a road. We're running dogs with horses and all that stuff. So my dad's down the next road. This is not where most of his friends are put out. This is where, like my dad, Charlie Dean, or Senator, or whatever. Honey hole, call it that. So here comes the dogs and boom, boom. And my dad hears Charlie shoot and my dad walks down to Charlie Dean. And Charlie Dean's got, it's a spike deer. Charlie Dean's got two $100 deer, one on this horn, one on this horn. My dad says, "Hey, Charlie, how you doing?" "Hey, Maurice, I shot this deer, and I know you don't want me to shoot it, so I'm just prepaying the fine right now. No problem." So we load the deer up on a truck and the horses, and we pick up all my dad's buddies and, you know, all kind of people. So we have the ceremony after lunch. You know, some people get the shirt tails cut if you miss a deer, and somebody gets the first deer, they get some blood on them. That's a ritual, you know, baba boo ba boo. And then if you get fined, you know, you got to stand and pay your fine. And I'll tell you about the court time. We had a court a long time ago. I'll tell you that. That's a great story. But anyway. So they put old Charlie Dean up on the back of the truck with his deer and his $200 bill. I live here in Citrus County. My dad lives in Pinellas County. I work up here. I live here. I happen to go to the watering holes around Citrus County. I don't go as much as I used to. I don't hardly go to the watering hole. If you don't know what a watering hole is, I'm sure everybody knows, it's a place to go get a drink. They call them watering holes. It's called, where are you going? Watering hole. Which one? So my dad gets done with the ceremony, everybody leaves, and we vacuum the house, the big house, and clean it all up, and he's getting ready to get in the station wagon to go home. He said, "What are you going to do tomorrow, Dixie?" I said, "Dad, I'm going to get finished cleaning up around here." He said, "Well, let me tell you what I would do if I were you. I'd go take them two $100 bills, and I'd go back over to that sheriff's office, and I'd give them to him, or you're going to get stopped in every one of them watering holes you go to, and he's going to pop your butt. I can tell you that right now. So tomorrow morning, Monday, get up in your little truck and take them same two $100 bills and say, 'Appreciate it, Sheriff.'" And I come on home. Smart. That's what happened. I can tell you that.
Yeah.
So we had a lot of fun. We cut shirt tails out. We had these trials on deer hunting. We had a lot of problems with trespassing. And it got to be where we would, for I don't know, a couple of years there, we would go dump the dogs out. And I'd have a couple of deputy sheriffs with us that were good arrest on site. So we go dump the dogs out, get them dogs run them deer, we go hunt trespassers. It was a hoot. Now me, Leo, Rodney, and Charlie Simmons, Mike Ritchie, they're full-blown deputy guys in plain clothes riding a horse. They can arrest you right now. It's a felony for having a gun on agricultural land or having a gun on posted, properly posted, or fenced property. So we had a properly posted, fenced, and under agriculture, timber and cattle. Felony.
Wow.
Take your gun away from you and felony. So to deter trespassing, we used to pay $500 for information leading to the conviction of trespasser. If you caught three and you convicted three, information lead to conviction of, you got $1,500. Those deputies, Charlie and Mike Ritchie, would start about October, lay in the woods and make their Christmas money. And I was glad to pay them.
Yeah, I bet you were.
Yeah. Yeah. So pretty soon the word.
So people were trespassing to hunt?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, shooting your game.
Yeah, yeah.
Occasionally, maybe not too much of the calves, but that happened, I'm sure. So we used to have a lot of fun doing that. You had them deputies with you. We come up on a couple of guys one time, face down, all camoed. I just saw one of them running around a horse, and there's a guy that could barely see him, all camoed out with leaves all over him because they're trying to hide from us. And the leader goes, "Look here. There's a guy laying down in the dirt right there on the ground. We're on the horse." I said, "Where, Leo?" "Right there." And old Charlie said, "Well, we got here. We got us a trespass. Ching, ching. See, you can arrest this guy right now. Pull a little paddy wagon and have him come on get him. Ching, ching." That guy gets up. Old Charlie Simmons, he's the deputy sheriff, says, What are you in here with?
Nobody.
Where are you from?
Tampa.
He said, I'll tell you right now. You ain't from, you might be from Tampa, but you ain't there by yourself. There ain't nobody coming here by themselves. Somebody brought you in here. So we got your gun and you're going to jail. Unless you want to start singing like a canary. He said, if you start singing like a canary, we'll give you your gun back and you ain't going to jail. This guy starts singing like a little bird. There's another guy over there, and there's one over there. Trail. Oh, ching, ching, $500 a pop. So the guy goes, well, these are my buddies. And Charlie goes, you know, I changed my mind. We're going to, you're going to jail. And, Leo goes, and we're going to hunt with your gun tomorrow. That's how it was, Merrill. Back in the days, that's how it was. Take him over to the jail. They called it Paddy Wagon. Got so bad up there one time, we had an airplane go up, look for them. Oh. Had a lot of fence cutting,
yeah,
fire burning, a destruction of property. It got so bad, we had deer heads hanging over a Hollingswood sign, like the Godfather.
Yeah.
So one time I caught this trespasser. It got so bad, I had this judge. The judge come over to the ranch and we rode around. I showed him all the fence cutting. I showed him where they burnt the woods and destruction of the property. He said, bring me a trespasser. We'll stop this. I said, okay. Make sure you get him arrested. Make sure he's behind the fence. Make sure he is behind the posted sign that he has a firearm. And you get a deputy to arrest him. Not a warrant out for his arrest. Arresting. So we got this guy. He was trespassing. And we got the sheriff, deputy, arrested. Took him over there and booked him. So a couple weeks later, it's time for his, whatever he called, arraignment, whatever it's called. So I go over there. Can't remember. I get the judge's name in a minute. A great guy. Not Schofield. I have to look it up. Anyway, so I'm sitting over there in the judge's out there in the courtroom. And before me was some people that were stealing oranges out of Citrus Grove. And he threw the book at them, big time. So our case comes up. I never forget, hits the gavel. Call the press in here. Calls the St. Pete Times and the Chronicle. I want y'all to take notes on this. The trespassing has stopped on Hollingswood Ranch as of today. And all the cattle owners and citrus owners and agriculture producers in Citrus County. It has stopped as of today. Young man, how do you plead? And he pled, and the judge threw that gavel down and said, 1 year in jail. 1 year. Front headlines.
I bet.
Buddy, it stopped. Those trespassers were fixing fences. That's a little humor on it, but that trespassing stopped. Right then, no more trespassing. No more stealing oranges. No more trying to steal your cattle, shooting your deer, mm-hmm. cutting your fence, burning your land up. About 2 weeks later, this guy is sitting in the jail. The judge calls me. Dixie, how you doing? I said, as quiet as a mouse over here. He said, I want to turn a guy out. I said, fine, turn him out.
Yeah.
He said, I don't want anybody that's going to jail for you.
Yeah.
I said, I understand that. I don't want anybody going to jail, period. Just throw a stop.
Yeah.
No special. Stop. We still have it. Still have it today.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime you're a landowner, whether it's big or small, or whether you butt up against state land or federal land or county land, there's trespassers. They can't stand it. They want to go trespass. Because usually if you go on somebody else's land, you got to go shoot deer.
Yeah.
It's part of it.
Because you're managing it better.
It's part of it. As WC said to me one time, he said, you're going to have to live with it, and you're going to have to turn your head a little bit. Because if you don't, they're going to burn you out. They're going to cut all your fences. And these locals around here will take this place over. You're going to have to live with it. Turn your head a little bit. So I learned to live with it. We were building a fence down there in the South Pasture one time. And Billy Samples, a local, hard knocks, local guy. He trespassed all the time. I'd run into him in the warden holes or where. And he goes, man, I see y'all build a new game plot down there and a tree stand. I said, Billy, you're just talking. He goes, no, it's over there. It's right over there. And he pointed on a map where it was. And he goes, next time you come down there, I'll leave you a note up on the tree stand. So I went over there, got a little note. Hey, Dixie, Billy. We're setting up in the tree stand. He's a local, lived right behind, down in the South Pasture on Indian Waters or whatever the road down there. So I remember what WC told me. So I said, you know what? You ain't gonna beat him. He sees you coming and going. He knows when you're driving down there.
Yeah.
So I called him up on the phone. I said, Billy, I'm putting a 5-strand barbed wire, brand new fence up on this boundary. Brand new. 5-strand, brand new post. And I said, I know where you come in and out. And I said, I'm gonna do you and me a big favor. When I get to your little trail, when I get to your little trail, I'm only putting 4 strands up, and I'm gonna spread the wire just a little bit so you don't scratch yourself. I said, that's what I told him, so you don't scratch yourself, please don't cut my fence. And when I said that, Marilyn, he quit trespassing. Because it was not a game.
Yeah,
it's
right.
A game.
Right.
It's a game.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, we're buddies. That's how I met Howard Standard and Jimmy Cornell. That's how I met them. Their dogs would come. Their dogs. My dad would pick up the dogs out there in the South Pasture. Jimmy Cornell, Howard Standard. And we bring dogs up to barn, and we call Jimmy Cornell, Howard Standard. They come out and get them. Or they come out and get them Monday or whenever. I didn't know Jimmy, didn't know him, he's local, knew the name, I didn't know Howard. This went on for weeks. My dad called me one day, says, I'm coming up Friday afternoon, I want you to call Jimmy and Howard, and I want to come out to the ranch, I want to meet them.
Okay.
I said, okay. I said, Dad, they're locals, I know they are, their dogs are on our ranch all the time. I said, yeah, I know. He said, I want you to meet him. I said, okay, he wants to meet him. So he comes up Friday afternoon. There come Jimmy and Howard. They come out there. My dad says, I'm introduced himself. I said, I want to invite you guys to go hunt with me. Y'all got the best goddamn dog I've ever seen. And I want y'all to come help me hunt. And that's how it happened. That's how we met.
Sometimes it's easier than fighting. Huh? Sometimes it's easier.
So I was out there in the woods one time riding in the trail over there. I had these little walkie-talkies. You know, we have radio and that little walkie-talkie thing on your saddlebag. My dad had a CB radio, and he called me on the CB radio. He said, I'm going to leave you a cold beer. Looks like you need one. On the fence post by the bull scrapes. Game plot. I said, okay. So he drove by Bull Scrape. This is a true story, I ain't kidding you. Drove by Bull Scrape, got out of his truck, set a cold Budweiser up on the fence post. And he's talking on the radio. And Howard and Jimmy, I ain't kidding you, Marilyn, I'm not making this up, are right over there. They're over there before we met them. They're right over there hunting, and they hear all this going on. And Jimmy told me 4 years later, him and Howard walked up and got that beer off that fence post. Because I told my dad, I said, Dad, I went by the fence post. I left the beer
there.
I said, I didn't find your beer. He said, I left it there. I said, but it ain't there. So that's what happened.
Had been. Somebody else just drank it.